This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
My name is Dean Hart, and I'll be reading to you some current articles from Newsweek magazine. This one's from the politics section. Donald Trump's women voter problem is getting worse, by Kate Plummer. With 7 months to go until November's presidential election and the majority of polls showing the presumptive presidential candidates, Donald Trump and Joe Biden are basically neck to neck. The pair both need every vote they can secure to get the keys to the White House. But Trump, the Republican former president, may be hampering his chances at success because of his standing with one key demographic in the adult voting population, women. Polls show that the proportion of women who plan to vote for Trump in November is less than the proportion who voted for him in the 2020 election. Meanwhile, experts told Newsweek Trump's views on abortion and his recent legal cases involving women will impact voter behavior on polling day. Newsweek contacted a representative for Trump by email to comment on this story. 2020, Trump's vote share among women in the election improved from 2016, rising from 39% to 44%, while Biden won 55% of the vote, according to analysis from the Pew Research Center. But according to a January Quinnipiac University poll of registered voters, 58% of women now back Biden, while 36% back Trump. In December, the same polling company found the gap was 53% to 41%, showing Trump's support among women is declining. An April poll by the New York Times and Siena College, known as the most accurate pollster in the country, gave Biden a 16-point lead over Trump among women, with 53% of the vote shared to Trump's 37%. Meanwhile, according to an exclusive poll for Newsweek, the gender divide in American politics is widening, with men becoming increasingly conservative and women leaning liberal. With polls so tight, Trump's declining support among women could cost him the election. So speaking to Newsweek, Heath Brown, an associate professor of public policy at City University of New York, said the political gender gap will grow in the future, in part because of the abortion debate currently gripping America. In 2022, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, a 1973 court decision that granted a woman's right to a medical abortion. Since then, a number of states have enacted near total bans on abortion. In April, the Arizona Supreme Court ruled that the state must abide by the 1864 law that makes abortion punishable by between 2 and 5 years in prison. The only exception is if the mother's life is at risk due to the pregnancy. In the same month, Trump said he believes abortion limits should be left to the states and said he was proud of the overturning of Roe v. Wade. His statement triggered a backlash from anti-abortion groups, and polls have suggested abortion remains a challenging issue for Republicans. It seems clear that there is a political gender gap that is real and will grow in the future, Brown said. He added, one contributing factor is the importance placed on women's reproductive justice, the issue that there is the greatest difference in importance between young men, 42%, and young women, 58%. Abortion rights is the most important issue in this campaign right now, and likely will continue to be until the election in November. Mark Shanahan, an associate professor in politics at the University of Surrey in the UK, said Trump had an aggressive, macho, and somewhat whiny style, which puts female voters off on him. He told Newsweek in 2016 that there was a myth that Trump won more votes from women than Clinton. He didn't. Around 42% of women voted for him. That figure remained almost the same in 2020, although the ex-president performed somewhat better among older white and especially evangelical women. But Trump's aggressive macho and somewhat whiny style appears to be working even less well in attracting female voters outside this MAGA core this time around. He added that Trump's stance on abortion, as well as his recent court cases against women, have also contributed to him losing support of this demographic. In January, Trump was ordered to pay $83.3 million in damages to E. Jean Carroll, a journalist, for statements made in 2019. He said she was lying about allegations that he sexually assaulted her inside a Manhattan department store dressing room in the 1990s. He was previously ordered to pay Carroll $5 million in damages last year in another civil defamation trial, stemming from a denial he made about her claims in 2022. He has repeatedly denied all wrongdoing and said he will appeal the verdict. This week, his hush money trial started, which will determine whether Trump falsified business records over payments to two women, former adult star Stormy Daniels and McDougal, to keep alleged affairs between them secret before the 2016 election so as not to harm his campaign. Trump has also been accused of sexual assault by more than a dozen women, which he denies. He once boasted of grabbing women by the pussy, as heard in the infamous Access Hollywood tape. His enabling of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, his boorish alpha male characterization in the media, and his recent court appearances in both the E. Jean Carroll and Stormy Daniels cases do little to win over younger, more centrist or minority women, and the older end of his MAGA 2016 supporters dying off. Shanahan said, Biden has tied himself to his support of women's reproductive rights, and while hardly the most liberal of Democrats, largely supports progressive female causes. It is no surprise he's polling well ahead of Trump among women. Thomas Whalen, an associate professor who teaches U.S. politics at Boston University, agreed that the abortion debate has contributed to women's views on Trump. Trump has always had a woman problem, he told Newsweek. What's changed is that the Dobbs decision has made women's reproductive rights even a more prominent issue than it was. Despite his best attempts to muddle the issue, Trump can't escape his full-throated past endorsement of those forces looking to deny women's rights to choose. The great pitcher Satchel Paige once advised, "Don't look back, something might be gaining on you." Well, in Trump's case, the abortion issue is ready to pass on by and leave in the political dust come November 5th. Among women voters, he has no one else to blame but himself. This article comes under the news section of the magazine. Former pastor tears into Donald Trump, by Alyssa Higham. A former pastor has branded Donald Trump the Antichrist for his supposed hold over evangelical Christians. In an article published on a progressive news site, Salon, Nathaniel Manderson said his fellow evangelical believers should reject the former president. If evangelical Christians really want to save this country and redeem the message of Christ, as I believe most of them do, they must begin by renouncing the Antichrist who has led them so far into darkness, the journalist and former pastor wrote. Trump has long been popular with evangelical voters. In the Iowa caucuses last month, the former president received 53% of their vote. This week, he will speak at the International Christian Media Convention in Nashville, Tennessee. Newsweek has contacted Trump via the press form on his website on Monday. However, despite Trump's popularity, Manderson said that evangelicals should reject the last 50 years of political posturing that he believes has been embraced by the church. They must reject the very foundations of the political agenda that has provided the evangelical church with so much power, even as its absolute numbers in society have continued to decline, Manderson wrote. Manderson added that liberal mockery of the former president will not break the spell, he said. Trump has, over evangelical believers across the U.S., referred to the likes of Rachel Maddow and Bill Maher, both of whom have taken aim at the Republican in the past, Manderson said that evangelical Americans do not need to be told that they shouldn't believe in Trump. Rather, that the answer comes from within the evangelical movement itself. Manderson added that Christians should put the teachings of God before their beliefs regarding how America should be managed by a government. As Christians, we believe that one day we must all face judgment before our Creator, that we will tell Him about the decisions we made during this dark time in America. We loved You, Lord, and we loved our neighbors. But we forgot about that part for a while because deflation made us uncomfortable and we thought that foreigners were taking over our country. Sympathizing with Christians whom he claims have been mocked by the liberal media, Manderson wrote that he can feel the temptation to enjoy Trump when he attacks U.S. media. However, he added that a spiteful approach may be the way of the world, but if the Christian faith is to be preserved, can only do so by rejecting the current American culture of spite, vengefulness, and selfishness. Manderson also criticized the evangelical movement as a whole, with the left and right sides failing to come to an agreement in his mind. Most of the Christian left has no backbone or force when it comes to speaking out against their evangelical brethren, he wrote. There is an understandable reluctance to condemn people they feel connected to by faith, and who they hope to redeem, Manderson added. But in fact, by watering down their attacks on evangelical philosophy, they lose the respect of the evangelical fellowship they wish to win back. Here's one from the U.S. section of the magazine. Jill Stein handcuffed by police at college protest, by Khalida Rahman. Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein was among dozens arrested at Washington University in St. Louis on Saturday. Students continue to protest the Israel-Palestine war on college campuses across the country. More than 80 arrests were made after students, employees, and others marched to multiple campus locations, pitched tents, and indicated that they do not intend to leave, university officials said in a statement on Saturday. Video posted on social media by Callie Cox, a reporter for the Riverfront Times, showed Stein being led away by officers in handcuffs. Stein was arrested along with campaign manager Jason Call and deputy campaign manager Kelly Merrill Kayer Call told Newsweek. The demand from the encampment was specifically for their university to divest from Boeing, which manufactures munitions used in the ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza at their nearby St. Charles facility, Call said. Stein campaign supports the demands of the students and their peaceful protest and assembly on campus. Student protest for peace and civil liberties has always represented the best part of our collective moral conscience, solidarity. We are here to support the students who are standing up for our highest American values, for our democracy, for an end to this genocide, which is unacceptable and a blight on this nation, Stein told Cox in an interview before her arrest. Students have been demanding their schools cut financial ties to Israel and divest from companies that they say are profiting from the war in Gaza, in which Israel has killed more than 34,000 Palestinians. The Associated Press reported, citing the local health ministry. It erupted after Hamas's October 7th attack on southern Israel, when 1,200 people were killed and around 250 others were taken hostage. Some Jewish students say the student protests have veered into anti-Semitism, though many Jewish students are among the protest organizers and refute those allegations. Pro-Palestinian protest encampments spread to colleges across the U.S. and abroad in solidarity with students at Columbia University, where more than 100 students were arrested last week after university officials called in the police to clear an encampment on the campus lawn. Since then, other universities have also moved to shut down student encampments and arrest hundreds of demonstrators. Washington University's statement said that the protesters on Saturday had entered the campus with the intention of causing significant disruptions. It said it quickly became clear through the words and actions of this group that they did not have good intentions on our campus, and that this demonstration had the potential to get out of control and become dangerous. When the protesters began to set up a camp in violation of the university's policies, officials made the decision to tell everyone present that they needed to leave the university. They needed to leave, and that's, you know, quoted by the university spokesperson. We arrested more than 80 individuals who refused to leave after being asked multiple times. Those individuals will face trespassing charges, and some could also be charged with resisting arrest and assault, according to the university. Megan Green, president of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen and an adjunct professor at the university, said in a post on X that the university's statement is wild and absolutely false. There was no turn at the protest other than students sat down to eat. Some left to go to the bathroom, completely calm, till the police came in like an ambush, Green wrote. Simply a tactic to scare folks and to try to discredit the protest. The only aggressors were the police and the university, who called in 6 police departments to respond. The University of Megan Green have been contacted for further comment via email. Majority of voters say Donald Trump was a success. Joe Biden is a failure, by Jason Lemon. Former President Donald Trump received more good polling news on Sunday, while President Joe Biden appears to struggle to appeal to Americans ahead of the November presidential election. While Biden has seen improvement in some recent national and state-level polls, overall the Democratic incumbent appears to be fighting an uphill battle against his Republican rival. Trump and Biden are polarizing figures, with many polls showing that they are unpopular with a majority of Americans. The latest poll from CNN SSRS showed that the majorities of Americans now view Trump's presidency as a success and Biden's presidency as a failure. Among those surveyed, 55% said they view the former Republican president's White House term as successful, whereas 61% say they view the current Democratic president's tenure as a failure. Notably, CNN, the CNN polling from January 2021, shortly after the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol, showed 55% of Americans viewed Trump's presidency as a failure back then. In the new poll, Biden also trails Trump in a head-to-head matchup, as well as in a race including third-party candidates. Head-to-head, Trump leads Biden by 6 points, with 49% compared to the incumbent president's 43%. That's a 2-point decrease for Biden since a CNN poll in January, while Trump supporters remain stable. The former president also leads Biden among young voters. The Democratic incumbent has the support of just 40% of voters under the age of 35, whereas his Republican rival has a backing of a slim majority, 51%. The poll was conducted from April 18th to the 23rd and included a random national sample of 1,212 adults drawn from a probability-based panel. The margin of error was plus or minus 3.4 points. Newsweek reached out to the Trump and Biden campaigns via email for comment on Sunday morning. The CNN poll comes as polling averages in the key battleground states of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin show Trump leading Biden in all of them. In Arizona, Trump currently leads Biden 43.2% to 39.7%, according to ABC News polling analysis site 538's average. The Republican has the backing of 45.6% compared to the Democrats' 39.3% in Georgia. Meanwhile, Trump is at 42.8% and Biden has 39.6% in Michigan. The 538 average for Nevada has the Republican at 43.3% and the Democrat at 37.2%. In North Carolina, Trump is at 45.1% compared to Biden's 39.7%. Wisconsin and Pennsylvania are closer contests, but Biden still leads. The Republican leads 43% to the Democrats, 41.9% in Pennsylvania, and 42% to 40.8% in Wisconsin. Here's one from the U.S. section again. Kristi Noem's dog killing mocked at White House Correspondents' Dinner by Khalida Rahman. Comedian Mike Friend made a joke at the White House Correspondents' Dinner about South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem's admission that she killed her own dog. Personating former President Donald Trump, Friend said that it was a tremendous opportunity to be at the most failed dinner anybody's ever seen before launching into jokes that referenced current events. Let's face it, folks. I'm on fire right now like the guy outside the courthouse, right? He said, referencing a man who set himself on fire outside the courthouse where Trump's hush money criminal trial is taking place. Not soon enough, he said, when the joke elicited a mixed reaction from the audience, but I will tell you, I am killing this dinner harder than Kristi Noem kills the puppies. Noem's office has been contacted via email for comment. Noem, a Republican and a potential running mate for Trump, drew backlash this week after The Guardian reported that she described shooting her 14-month-old dog, Cricket, in her soon-to-be-released book, No Going Back, The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward. According to The Guardian, Noem said she included the story of Cricket, a wire-haired pointer she was training for pheasant hunting, to illustrate her willingness to do anything difficult, messy, and ugly if it needs to be done. Noem writes that she took Cricket on a hunting trip with the older dogs, hoping to calm down the puppy. Instead, Cricket went out of her mind with excitement, chasing all those birds and having the time of her life. On the way home from the hunting trip, Noem writes that she stopped to talk to a family. Cricket got out of Noem's truck and attacked some of the family's chickens, killing some, then bit her. Cricket behaved like a trained assassin, she writes. Noem repeatedly apologized to the distraught family, wrote them a check, and helped them dispose of the carcasses, she writes. I hated that dog, Noem writes, deeming her untrainable and dangerous to anyone she came in contact with. That moment, Noem writes, I realized I had to put her down. She grabbed her gun, led Cricket to a gravel pit, and killed her. It was not a pleasant job, but it had to be done, she writes. Noem writes that her family also owned a nasty and mean male goat that smelled bad and liked to chase her children. She decided to kill the goat in the same manner as Cricket, but she writes that the goat survived the first shot she fired. So she went back to the truck, had another shell, then shot him again. The book excerpts prompted immediate criticism on social media from both Democrats and Republicans. Kristi Noem is trash. Rick Wilson of the Lincoln Project, a conservative group that opposes Trump, wrote on X, formerly Twitter, you down old dogs, hurt dogs, sick dogs, humanely, not by shooting them and tossing them in a gravel pit. Unsporting and deliberately cruel, but she wrote this to prove that the cruelty is the point. Noem defended herself on social media. We love animals, but tough decisions like this happen all the time on a farm, she wrote on X. Sadly, we just had to put down 3 horses a few weeks ago that had been in our family for 25 years. A lot of good articles in the U.S. section of the magazine, including this one. Kristi Noem responds after backlash over killing puppy by Gabe Wisnant. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem defended herself on social media on Sunday after facing backlash for an admission that she killed one of her own dogs in a gravel pit after a pheasant hunt trip. British newspaper The Guardian published an excerpt of Noem's upcoming book, No Going Back, The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward, on Friday, in which the governor shared an account of shooting the 14-month-old puppy named Cricket, which she wrote had an aggressive personality. On the way home from the trip, Cricket escaped Noem's truck and attacked a family's chickens, grabbing one chicken at a time, crunching it to death with one bite, then dropping it to attack another. This made the chicken's owner cry, and Noem paid them while also helping clean the mess the dog had made. She added that when she grabbed Cricket, the dog whipped around to bite me. At that moment, Noem realized I had to put her down, she said. The governor also wrote that she hated that dog, described it as untrainable and dangerous to anyone she came in contact with. Since the release of the passage, Noam, a close ally of former President Donald Trump and a possible vice presidential pick, yeah, she is a possible vice presidential pick, has faced scorn from Republicans and Democrats alike. Noam responded to the criticism on X, formerly Twitter, on Sunday and wrote, "I can understand why some people are upset about a 20-year-old story of Cricket, one of the working dogs at our ranch, in my upcoming book, No Going Back. The book is filled with many honest stories of my life, good and bad days, challenges, painful decisions, and lessons learned." Noam also contended that she followed the law and was being a responsible parent, dog owner, and neighbor. South Dakota law states that dogs who attack and kill livestock can be put down. Given that Cricket had shown aggressive behavior toward people by biting them, I decided what I did. As I explained in the book, it wasn't easy, but often the easy way isn't the right way, she continued. Chapter 4034 of South Dakota law under dog licenses and regulations states, "Any person owning, keeping, or harboring a dog that chases, worries, injures, or kills any poultry or domestic animal is guilty of a Class 2 misdemeanor and is liable for damages to the owner thereof for any injury caused by the dog to any such poultry or animal." The governor said she believes the book's passage about the death of her puppy shows constituents that she is authentic. "My hope is anyone reading this book will have an understanding that I always work to make the best decisions I can for the people in my life, whether running the ranch or in politics. I have never passed on my responsibilities to anyone else to handle," Noam wrote on X. Newsweek has not obtained a copy of Noam's book and has been unable to verify the reported quotes. Newsweek reached out to Noam for further comment on Sunday through her website. After Sunday's statement, Noam was met with the additional backlash. Meghan McCain, a daughter of the late GOP Senator John McCain of Arizona, wrote on X, "My family has a ranch outside of Sedona. No one has ever shot a dog for any reason. This is not a rural ranch thing. My dad's dog Burma's ashes are on our family's mantle after he died naturally. What I do know is killing and torturing animals is a trait of a serial killer." In her latest statement, Christy Noam continues to blame the murderer victim for his death. "Now Cricket in puppy heaven has to endure Christy Noam defaming him to justify the murder." Ron Flipkowski, a vocal Trump critic and editor-in-chief of Midas Touch, wrote on X, "Christy, sweetie, you could have rehomed the dog. You didn't have to shoot it in the face. P.S. You're never coming back from this," Democratic strategist Ali Samarco replied to Noam on X. Asher Rancapa, an attorney and former FBI agent, also wrote on X, "Sounds like out of at least three options, train the dog, drive any distance to a shelter, or three, shoot it on the spot. You literally took the easiest one." My name is Dean Hart, and I read to you some current articles from Newsweek magazine.